Welcome to Leading the Next Generation with Tim Elmore. I am your co-host, Andrew McPeak, and our mission here at Growing Leaders is to empower the emerging generations with skills to lead in real life. Now, today, Tim, we're talking about a really important subject that keeps coming up. It's the subject of anxiety. And one of the reasons we wanted to talk about it is because you had a conversation with one of our partners that was just absolutely floored us.
It did. I could not believe it. In fact, we stayed on the phone quite a while because I wasn't believing what he was saying. So anxiety is certainly an issue among adolescents and young adults, but it's prevalent. I mean, most demographics would say, I'm stressed today.
Yeah.
You know, it's Kramer on Seinfeld. I'm stressed. Oh,
yeah.
I'm stressed.
Yes.
Okay. But I was talking to, this was a director of performance of one of the teams, a professional athletic teams that we work with. And we were just talking about how his team was doing. They're using Habitudes. And he began to get very, very transparent with me, saying, yeah, these professional athletes getting paid millions of dollars, he said, they are lonely.
Mm.
And I thought, you're kidding me. I'm picturing them at parties and signing basketballs or baseballs or whatever.
Yeah.
And he said, they're lonely. He said, they're anxious much of the time. And he said, they're jealous.
Wow.
Jealous of each other, jealous of playing time, of numbers, of photos, of articles that are written about them. So they're keeping score, clearly because social media helps us keep score on our lives.
Yeah, yeah.
So I said, wait a minute, repeat this. So this is not a student athlete in ninth grade or freshman
even
year of college.
A Division I college athlete.
Yeah, right. So this is a professional athlete. And when we began to talk, he said, yeah, at halftime, the players will come into the locker room. And instead of talking to each other about what happened the first half, maybe how they need to make some changes, they're scrolling on their phones, looking at what people have said about them. The armchair quarterback, if you will.
Unbelievable.
And I'm thinking, I just can't believe this. So, and in fact, I know some of the names. You would know some of these
names
of these athletes. And you would not guess that even though kids look up to them and say, you must have it all together,
No,
they're experiencing the same anxiety that a ninth grader would be experiencing in high school.
Well, that's what I was just thinking was, I'm imagining that 10-year-old or that 10th grader at home scrolling through Instagram, sees their favorite player, right, and thinks, I'll never measure up to that, and starts to feel anxiety and stress, FOMO, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
At the same moment, perhaps, that same professional athlete is scrolling through their phone, looking at everything that people are saying about them and thinking, I don't measure up to this person that people think I am. That, to me, is a fascinating case study in what's happening in the 21st century. So
the overwhelming presence of social media has made many of us feel like victims. We're playing defense, not offense.
Yeah.
Oh, we post that selfie or whatever, but it's causing a rise in anxiety. And the rise in anxiety among adolescents has just been skyrocketing. Most of our listeners would know this, but since the early 2000s, if you look at the data, we began to see it was a double click on every year on how much anxiety was rising. And by 2012, 2013, it just began to take off. And that's when social media's presence on our smartphone just skyrocketed. So some 3 million teens ages 12 to 17 has had at least one major depressive episode in the past year, panic attacks,
depression. 3 million, that's crazy.
Yeah, it is. I mean, 3,000 would be too much for me, but 3 million, we gotta stop and say, what's wrong? What are we doing or what are we failing to do to lead these kids well?
Well, I just know, as we're spending time with our partners, you and I get to get out and go to high schools and middle schools, colleges and universities. We're working with parents and teachers and all these different folks, and we continue to hear this message. 3 million is a big number, and yet at the same time, with the number of conversations I've had, it doesn't feel that big of a number to me anymore because I'm not shocked by it anymore.
Yeah.
I keep hearing over and over, we're overwhelmed, we can't handle this, we don't know what to do, how do we help our kids, all those kinds of messages.
Yeah, the Child Mind Institute tells us the ratios. So 1 in 5 teens or young adults struggle with a mental illness or a disorder, 1 in 5. And, of course, we've heard as much as about half of university students today say, it's almost difficult to function. I almost can't even function.
Yep.
My level of anxiety is so high, and I have a panic attack every week. So I'm thinking something's wrong. We're not being proactive enough as we lead, coach, and teach these these kids, we got to figure it out. So that's what this podcast is about.
Well, this is a really important subject. And I know we're going to talk about where do you think this comes from. But even you and I, before we were talking, we talked about what are some of the symptoms? What is happening because of this epidemic? So I don't know if you want to talk about that.
Sure. Well, one of the things we hear as we work with thousands of schools is many of the high schools and colleges we would partner with would say we cannot keep enough counselors on the campus to address the students coming to them. It used to be a little bit of an enigma or, I don't want to tell anybody I'm going to see a counselor. Now they're going, I'm seeing a counselor.
And you would also think that that's like community colleges where students struggle with grades and some of those things. You and I are hearing this at major universities, the names of which everyone listening to this podcast would have heard of.
Yeah. And most schools would say, this last year a suicide happened on our campus or more.
Or more. Yeah.
So burner phones has become an issue.
Yeah.
So a parent might say, well, if phones are causing all this anxiety, let's just take it away from them. Well, I wish it were that easy.
Yeah.
The problem is, just like back in the baby boomer days, some kid was selling drugs out of his locker. They're now selling burner phones. It's that classic cheap cell phone that if you get your phone taken away by mom, you can pick up another one pretty cheap and stay on Snapchat or online.
Maintain access.
That's right. Maintain access.
That is wild stuff.
You had one you were talking about earlier, though.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was an article that I read. I think it came out about nine or 10 months ago from the New York Times that was talking about this epidemic. And one of the things that they referenced is meeting multiple teachers of middle school students who had their students' personal cell phone numbers.
Yeah.
And it wasn't anything shady going on. What was going on is the parents needed the teachers to reach out to their kids to give them an extra motivation to get out of bed in the morning.
Yeah.
As in this, you know, this teacher of an eighth grader is calling their students while they're driving into school and saying, hey, get up. Class is going to be great today. We need you there. Your fellow students are. And they just needed that extra motivation because mom or dad speaking into their kid's life was just not enough to get them out of bed.
Yeah. I'm at this point, I'm going, okay, we're going to do something.
Yes. Yeah.
So you made me aware in the month of February this year about a musician named Nash.
Yes.
Who had just released a song called Let's Stay in Our Pajamas.
Yeah.
You want to talk about that a minute? Because that song lyric basically describes the overwhelming nature that the average kid might have. And this guy's got a cult following. So talk about those lyrics.
Yeah, the artist's name is Nash, G-N-A-S-H. Uh-huh. The song is just called Pajamas, but that lyric is exactly what you were spot on. The chorus of the song is, let's stay in our pajamas, let's not leave the house. It's been real bad lately. Yeah. So let's just avoid it is basically the message of this song.
Yeah.
And even the concept of like whether or not there's another human being there with me, the best thing we could possibly do is not deal with our problems. Yeah. And we're going to do that by staying in the house.
So may I say the obvious, life was not supposed to look like this.
I would say not. Yeah. There's a reason we're shocked by this.
Let's take the remaining minutes, talk about the issues at hand and then maybe some solutions. I would love to jump into this and volley back and forth with you. So there are three overwhelmingly notable reasons, all of which, listeners, you would say, of course, that's it. But I think if we address these three big ones, we might take care of the majority, not all, but the majority of the issues that take place perhaps in students' lives. So let's do number one. Number one, it's odd, but it's our sedentary lifestyles today.
Yes, yes.
There's a direct correlation between the anxiety I feel and how long I sit still on any given day. Now, this seems paradoxical. One would say, boy, sitting still, pretty calm, pretty peaceful.
Yeah.
But that's not true. Our bodies were made for movement. We are wired for movement. Mm. Centuries ago, there was a lot more movement than there was today. You worked on a farm, you stood in a factory, and even before that, your work was outdoors. Somewhere, you were moving, lifting, cutting, driving, whatever you were doing.
Yeah.
And now we're just sitting still. And psychologists and, I would say, sociologists would both say, of course, this is adding to our anxiety levels.
I would say probably everyone is nodding along to this point because I think we all look at students today and think they don't ever leave the house, right? And so there's a bit of this we understand, but I think one of the things that's fascinating about this is how the science backs that up too. It's not just anecdotal. Kids need to get outside like we used to 20 years ago or 30 years ago. It's much more than that.
No doubt about it. So there's hundreds of hormones, enzymes, proteins, and chemical reactions happening while the body is physically active. We've both heard, I'm sure, someone say, you need to get out and just run. You need to get out and walk or whatever. And that was said even though they weren't a doctor, because they knew you're going to feel better. The endorphins that are released are coming out, and they make you happy. They adjust your mood levels. So I think this is just absolutely critical.
Yep.
My kids were both great examples. They're both grown adults now, but we had to say, get up from your computer and do something besides play a video game or do something online or chat or whatever with your friends.
And it's interesting that you mentioned endorphins, because I think a student can get those endorphins a lot of ways, right?
Yeah.
Especially in this 21st century world, technology offers the ability, the risk associated with playing a video game, for instance, or chatting online with a friend or sending risky pictures back and forth. All those things release endorphins as well, but they do it in an unhealthy way. And so that's a big reason why getting outside, getting moving, those kinds of things are so important, especially for a generation who their natural rhythms are not going to lead them to that outcome.
Yeah, yeah. So here's real quick a nutshell on the science of this. So the brain-derived neurotrophic factor, the BDNF, is what the doctors call it, hormone interacts with the central nervous system when you begin to move. By tripling the BDNF production with exercise, it's possible to improve moods.
Wow.
So we're in a better mood, boost cognitive function, so you're thinking better when you get up and move around, and improve memory.
Wow.
And then, of course, when kids are sedentary, the opposite of that, these hormones are unable to do their work. So, Andrew, you remember last year we decided we're going to give recess at our office.
Yeah.
You remember we have ping pong tables, cornhole.
Yeah.
You know, we got a little rec room, and it sounds funny, but I actually love seeing Cody out there playing ping pong or whatever. When JT and Cody get out there, it's a little bit
a little dangerous.
It's a little too active.
But that's all in the vein of these major companies like Google and Apple and Facebook, who have brought in these brain scientists who have said, you would think giving them a 20-minute break to play ping pong is going to negatively affect their productivity. It's the opposite way around, right?
It is.
And the same thing is true for students. You're spot on.
Yeah, good. So should we do number two?
Let's do it.
So the first one was sedentary lifestyles. The second one is solitary lifestyles. Now, this may be counterintuitive for you listeners. Today's students are connected virtually more than ever. We are in relationship, at least on a screen, with more people than we've ever been in relationship before. It is so fun that I could get on Facebook and connect with high school friends from 40 years ago. However, there's been a downside, and we did not see it coming, or at least very few of us saw it coming. We're now actually more solitary, even though we're more connected.
Yeah.
So I'm not with you physically, face to face. I'm just with you virtually, screen to screen. It's not the same thing. We say, well, hey, let's get together face to face. Okay, when should I Skype? So I feel like we didn't know this was coming, that it's actually led to our anxiety along the way.
It's the paradox of relationships in the 21st century is technology allows me to be more connected, as in have more connections with different people than ever before, but it also is making me more physically isolated from people than ever before.
Yeah.
You and I talk about this all the time, but I feel like our culture at large doesn't talk about this enough, right?
Yeah.
What happens when the primary form of your entertainment or primary form of your connection is at home, alone, in your room with the door closed and the lights off, you know, which is how most young people are doing their social interaction, especially on a weeknight, you know, that is having an effect. We would be dumb to think it's not having an effect.
Yeah. So in the community where I live, you're not far. I talked to some supervisors that worked at our shopping mall just north of Atlanta, and they said, the attendance is way down at shopping malls. Now, you remember your generation, that's where you hung out.
That's exactly
right. Back in the 90s or whatever, you know, they were just hanging around shopping malls. So they're with each other virtually. Now, here's some data that I just heard not long ago that has really made me think. So for years and years and years in modern history, 20th century history, teen homicide rates were pretty high. Mm. In fact, it was often young adults, young males that were doing the killing of one another.
Yeah.
Very, very sad statistic. But just a couple of years ago, teen suicide rates overtook teen homicide rates.
Yeah.
And you might go, what? How could that be? Well, here's the deal. So teen homicide is actually down.
Yes.
I mean, violent crimes are down in America. Yep. This is a wonderful thing. But suicide rates are up. What's happening is, if I'm with you less face-to-face, I can't kill you, which is good news, but I may make you kill yourself by cyberbullying, by what I say to you on social media.
Or and even again, just by mere posting, and you look at it, don't feel like you don't measure up, and then you don't feel worthless.
I don't want to go on. Yeah, it's really, really sad. So bottom line on this one, before we get to some other thoughts, are emotional intelligence, which we so believe is a vital skill set to develop, is not developed well on a device.
It
I'm not saying
be.
You can't, but it's just not, you just don't develop well. It's all about reading body language and reading faces and understanding what's happening.
Yeah, even watching a video about emotional intelligence is not as
it's
good
not quite
as
enough.
Spending time with people. Yeah,
that's right. So anxiety levels rise with increased interactions on social media, and they drop when you get face-to-face.
Yep.
So I love this psychologist, Jean Twenge, a good friend and one that we're a fan of. Jean Twenge concludes that the more students spend time in genuine conversations, face-to-face in the presence of people, anxiety levels drop.
Wow.
And what she tells us, in fact, she recently just gave us a thumbs up on some data we shared. If a teenager spends less than 2 hours a day on social media platforms, they're less vulnerable to anxiety and depression.
Wow.
More than 2 hours a day, that's when you become vulnerable.
So that's really the threshold that
it
she
is.
Found
yeah.
in the data.
I'm not saying you will get stressed or anxious, but you're much more vulnerable. And I would just say to our kids, just spend less than 2 hours.
Yeah.
You don't need more than 2 hours getting lost scrolling through your Instagram post or whatever. Just keep it less than 2 hours.
Yeah.
So, you know, our phones, my phone anyway, tells me how much time I've had on it. And I'll just make sure I'm trying to shoot for less than 2 hours, even as a grown man.
I love that. Do you know, this is a little bit of an anecdote, but there was an article, an interview that came out probably about a month or two ago at this point, where somebody interviewed Johnny Ive, who is one of the designer creators of the original iPhone. He still works at Apple, so he was with Steve Jobs when it was designed. And in their conversation where he asked him, is it being used as you intended when you designed this thing? He said no. And they said, oh, interesting. So how is it being misused? And he said, the amount of time people spend on the device, we never meant for that to be true.
Yeah.
He was thinking 4 hours or less, right?
Yeah.
Today, the average kid is spending 8 to 9 hours. Yeah. Crazy, crazy.
So, Andrew, you know the line I love to share. When our phones had leashes, we were free. Now our phones are free.
And we have leashes.
Yeah, it's so true.
We're attached to those things.
Yeah, we are. Yeah. So number three, big issue. So I mentioned sedentary lifestyles, solitary lifestyles. The third one is saturated lifestyles. Mm-hmm. So teens today consume thousands of messages a day.
Yeah.
I want to give a pregnant pause on that one. Listeners, check this out. Thousands of messages every day. Hundreds would seem like a lot to me, but thousands. I think the average adolescent, this is average, so some are less, some are more, 10,000 messages a day when you consider all the messaging that comes at a teenager in a high school or early college.
Yeah, and one scrolling session through Instagram, I've got hundreds
sometimes that
are coming at me.
And maybe you're not even fully conscious of all that you're consuming, all
Absolutely,
that you're digesting, but it's happening. And your brain up there is going, I don't think I was hardwired to take in this much data. Let me give one quick example that will give you perspective. So the average person today consumes as much information reading the Sunday edition of the New York Times as a person did living in the 19th century their entire lives.
Say that one more time.
Okay, yeah. So the average person today reading the weekend edition of the New York Times, just one, you know, but it's a thick paper.
Yeah.
Takes in as much information as a person living during the 19th century would consume their entire lifetime.
Wow.
That tells you life has changed. And again, I think we've got great brains, but consciously, I don't think we're hardwired to fully digest, take in that much, and still have sane peace of mind.
Yeah, and I think that's the trick, is the fully digest piece, because I keep reading from scientists who are studying the brain. Is what is happening is you're scrolling through those 10,000 messages, they're passing through your brain, but your memory is decreasing, your attention span is decreasing, focus is decreasing, all of those things are decreasing because you're not giving any one thing full attention.
Yeah. A wealth of information creates a poverty of attention.
Well said.
So this isn't just phones, though. If you look at the average teenager living in America today, their lives are saturated with activity, period.
Yes.
They're playing two sports, a travel ball, three practice. One of our team members, Jesse, coached some girls' soccer team. Three practices a week, and they're not even, you know, they're young teenagers.
Yeah.
You know, in the eighth grade. So I'm thinking, this is, what's going on? Well, it's the adult population that got so crazy consumed with my child's going to play in the, you know, major league soccer, you know, later. And so I look at teenagers today, and I am so grateful for the decision my wife and I made when our kids were teenagers. We said one extracurricular activity per semester.
Yeah.
Make it good. And by the way, you're going to stay committed to it all through, even if you get bored or tired of it.
Yep.
But then one the next semester. And they could keep the same, but they're not going to do 17 things because Johnny is doing 17 things or Susie's doing 17 things.
You want it to be a river, not a flood, right?
Yeah, that's right. So I saw a really cute cartoon. It was one of those one-frame cartoons. In the cartoon, two little girls are walking off soccer practice, the field. And one little girl says to the other one, "Wow, you got 15 minutes between soccer practice and violin lessons. What are you going to do with all that free time?" You know, and I thought, that is our life today. I mean, it's meant to be a comic, but that's kind of where we have landed.
Yeah.
So Dr. Peter Gray, a man I love to read after, he is a psychologist at Boston College. Here's what he says, and I'm going to read this. He says his greatest concern is not merely the volume of activity, but the fact that children are not given much, quote unquote, free playtime.
Wow.
So where they're in control of their time, far less than past generations. Today's kid lives a life that's supervised and prescribed by adults.
Mm.
Now, we thought that'd be good back in the 90s when we came up with that. Let's just make sure we're going to make sure they're on a track that's very purposeful and they're going to play Division I sports, you know. Well, when these kids aren't in control, they begin to develop an external locus of control in their minds.
Yeah.
It's up to somebody else to help me get through my day or whatever.
I'm not in control of my own
life. That's right. Yeah. And I am, in fact, a victim of mom or coach or dad. But again, this is not healthy. We, by adolescence, need to be developing our own internal sense of control where I'm in control, I'm figuring this out. And so this has me concerned, and I think this has added to the anxiety. Think about it. You're going to be more anxious if someone else is in control of your life.
Yeah.
Even if it's a good person. You're going, ugh.
Yeah.
And I believe in adolescence, we were meant to spread our wings and say, this is my life.
Increasingly, so, as time goes on.
Increasingly, of course. Yeah. Now, there can be a rebel without a cause.
Exactly.
Thank you, James Dean. But I think this is what we have not seen happen. And so the sedentary, solitary, saturated lifestyle has led to this rise in anxiety, for sure, and among the average teenager.
Well said. Well said. Well, these are three big issues, right?
Yeah.
And you even talk a little bit, and I actually want to get to it. What are some solutions to this? As somebody's thinking about this and going, okay, that makes sense. What do I do next?
Yeah.
I'd love for you to speak into that.
Sure. Well, I want this to be a volley because I really respect your insight on this as a young professional.
Yeah.
But real quick, let me bottom line the issue. So sedentary lifestyles leave them overweight. Solitary lifestyles leave them overindulged, usually on a feed on the phone. And then saturated lifestyles leave them overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And those are symptoms we're clearly seeing across the country from New York to California. So solutions. Some of these are very, very predictable, listeners, but I just want to get your brains going on maybe some creative ways you can do it at your home, at your school, your youth group that you lead or whatever. So number one, we've got to get them moving. We have to figure out ways to incentivize, make it fun, but get them moving. I mentioned the recess time that we have at our office. We both chuckle at that. It's important.
It is.
I think better if I get up and move around. I even have that little scooter that the interns got me last year that is stolen quite a bit, but at least they're moving when
they're
stealing it.
They gave it to you, and then they take it away.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So a good rule of thumb is to match the hours they have in front of a screen with the hours they have moving around. I just think, take that equation with you. However many hours they have in front of a screen, get them moving that same amount of hours, and we're probably going to have a healthy kid.
I always tell folks, make it as easy as a family walk after dinner, know, because you can add in the socialness to it as you do it. But
that's right.
Don't make it just, hey, you need to get outside, right? Turn it into a building activity where they feel like we're our family or our unit or our team is in this together.
We're doing something I want to do, so incentivize it.
Yeah.
And I would add, put a basket in your kitchen or your living room that you put your phones in when you're doing that walk.
So yes.
It's almost counterproductive if you're out there, but I'm still saturated on my phone.
Yes, yes.
It's kind of like the guy that said, my doctor told me to run for exercise, but the wind keeps putting my cigarettes out. You know, it's just it's just not working when you're smoking while you're running.
That's so, right.
And I would say put your phone away when you're walking.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm glad you enjoyed that joke.
I love your little pithy jokes,
all right,
Tim.
Thank
this
you.
Is great.
So number two, we've got to get them face-to-face with people and off their phones. So this is a second cousin to the first one. I think one good rule of thumb is to match the hours they have on a screen with the same amount of hours socializing. So maybe we take them to a mall. Maybe that's not your favorite place to take them. But get them where they're, you know, they're face-to-face with other people. We had this rule in our house. My son Jonathan still loves video games, still loves watching movies. But we'll just say, you know, it's wise psychologically for you to have, you know, real FaceTime with people.
Yeah.
And he'll try to do that. It's easier to veg
yes.
with a screen. It's not as taxing mm-hmm. to not be with people or have to read their body language. I'd rather watch something that I don't have to read. But I think we need to keep that muscle built. That's called social intelligence.
Absolutely, absolutely. And yeah. I think just creating environments for this to happen is what's really key, right?
Yeah.
Providing an opportunity. Hey, you know what? Why don't you have your friends over this weekend? You know, and just different things like that. That I think a lot of times we adults are not, we don't put as a priority.
Yeah.
And so it's just about taking that mentality of I need to make sure I'm creating environments where social interactions can happen, rather than it being forced. Like, hey, I'm driving you to the mall. I don't know who you're going to hang out with. Get in there. You know.
Yeah.
But thinking through that a little bit.
Yep. And then the last one, we've got to offer them free time, free playtime, as Peter Gray talks about at Boston College, and in control of their time.
Yeah.
So I know this is anecdotal, but when I picture my growing up years, a very typical day would be I'd get home, get my schoolwork, my homework done as fast as I could, because we're going to choose up sides and play baseball in the backfield here really soon. And that was, you played that until dinner. You had that maybe 3 hours.
Yeah.
Until 6 o'clock dinner or whatever. So I didn't realize what that was doing for me, but think about this. Think about internal locus of control and free play time. So we go out there, there'd be 15, 16 guys out there. We'd choose up our own sides, and we'd ump our own games. We had internal locus of control, you know?
Yep. Today, and some valuable life skills, not to
mention. That's very true. I learned the art of conflict resolution, the art of communication, teamwork, etc. Making sacrifices on behalf of the team, all those good things our grandpas told us about.
Yeah.
But today, if they're outside at all, there's four mothers out there doing the conflict resolution for them. You know, I mean, so we're still supervising all the time. So we need to let them go. It's like teaching a kid to ride a bike. Support and letting go.
Yep.
They've got to learn to ride that two-wheel bike eventually on their own. So we've got to take our hands off. And I know that's scary for some mamas and daddies, but we have to do it. And I'm just saying, again, I have an equation. Ensure that they limit social media time to 2 hours a day so that they can get out and control something else with people.
And that's what I was thinking. That free time you're talking about, to combine all three of these together, should have the guardrails of, I don't want you doing technology during free time, and I don't want you alone, right, during that free time. But those are the only two parameters, right?
Yeah.
Now go, you know.
Yeah.
And maybe they're building something with a friend or whatever it is. But there's a way, I think, to solve these issues.
Yeah, I really do. And so, again, I think my greatest problem as a young kid was, you know, where's my baseball mitt, or how do I find a friend or a girlfriend or whatever. Today, they're consumed with such heavy, heavy content because they can get news feeds or whatever coming in them. This is going to just make them more healthy. I believe if people will practice the simple things we've talked about, anxiety levels will drop. It may not go away completely, but they'll drop, and then peace of mind will return to our lives, which we all long for.
Yes, so good, so good. Well, Tim, thank you so much for those insights. This is an important conversation. And if you're listening to this and thinking, I want more, we're really excited because you and I have been working for a long time on a brand new book that's coming out. In fact, the pre-order has just launched. And the book that we were working on, we can tell you the title, is Generation Z, unfiltered.
Yeah.
And our vision for this, and I don't know if you want to add to this, was to create clarity on who is this generation, what are the things that they're struggling with, the challenges that they're facing, and what do they need from us, their adult leaders, whether we're an older brother or sister, a parent, a coach, a teacher, a leader, whatever it is, what do they need from us in order for them to be have the best chance of success?
Yeah, so as we did this book, Andrew, you and I both know, at the, from the very beginning, we said, there's lots of good data out there on Generation Z. There's social scientists and researchers doing good data. We wanted to do something that would complement that.
Yes.
So we're helping a reader in this book face the 9 big challenges that Generation Z faces that are unlike previous generations like yours or mine.
Yep.
So we're going to give you solutions, readers, to the 9 big. There's not only 9.
Yes.
But we talk about facing 9 big challenges, and it's solution. We call it research-based solution biased.
Yes.
In this book, yeah.
I love that. I love that. And so we had a lot of fun writing it and developing it. So I'm hoping it's a really helpful resource for you all. But the pre-order for it is live now at GenerationZUnfiltered.com. And here's what the pre-order all comes with. You get the book when it releases in the fall. You get the ebook. You get the audiobook. You also get the Marching Off the Map ebook. That's something you get right now because that's already released. And then on top of it, we've got 2 great resources for you to utilize this book in conjunction with the people around you. One is a digital discussion guide, so you can start a discussion group with other adults or other peers, other teachers, whoever it is, and begin to think about how do we apply some of this. Mm-hmm. But we also really wanted them to be able to engage with the Generation Z kids they lead.
Yeah.
And what better way to do this than through the power of conversation?
Yeah.
And so we actually took the content of the book and created table topics for adults and students together to have conversations. And so it's really, you know, there'll be a lot of ways to use it, but it's basically a tool that you can utilize to have conversations about these 9 big challenges with the students that you're leading. So all of that together, that's 6 different items that come together for this pre-order, and it's only $24.99. So we want to suggest please go to the website, GenerationZUnfiltered.com, pre-order that, and you're going to get all of that stuff. Obviously, it goes without saying, that stuff is not going to be all available for $24.99 after the book launches. So go check that out. I think that would be a great resource. Thank you so much for listening in on this. Thank you, Tim, for leading us in this conversation. As always, if you want to connect with us, please follow us on social media. We're at Growing Leaders and at Tim Elmore. Everywhere you are, we're probably there too. I don't think we're on Snapchat, but other than that, we're there. We also, it really helps us out if you would rate the podcast, give us 5 stars on iTunes. That really helps us out a lot. And then as always, if you've got ideas for this podcast, topics you want us to cover, people you want us to interview, shoot us an email, podcast@growingleaders.com. We love getting those messages from you. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, Tim, again, for leading us. And we'll see you next time.